And some of you know him by reputation. He's been in a lot of slides that have been part of my report from when I've returned from Africa. He's been a very important part of my time there in Africa. I was thinking about how the heck I introduce a man like this. And the best thing I could think about was, you know, all over the earth, the Lord is doing a mighty work, and it's hidden from us most of the time. You know, faithful people steadily, day after day after day after day, are ministering in His name in really hard places, in really unusual places, doing things that are kingdom things, that are changing people, and they're mostly unknown by the rest of the world. I get to introduce to you one of those people today. Caleb is a friend, and Caleb is also a mentor. I wish I could be like him. I hope one day that I'll be like him. And I hope that as he speaks today about his ministry and his heart, that you'll be drawn into what the Lord is doing all over the world, and know that whatever you're doing, however small it may seem to you, is not small to the Lord. So let Caleb's story and testimony be a reminder to each of us that we have a call and a place and a kingdom purpose, and nothing is small. So this is Caleb Muhoro from Kampala, Uganda. Caleb and I have known each other for what? 10 or more years. Yeah, something like that. And every time I go to Uganda, I stay with him and often visit the orphanages that he is in charge of. And when I can get him away from his busy schedule, he will take me into the shanty town and show me the ongoing work there. So Caleb has a story to tell today, and I want you to listen very carefully to it. He asked me if it was okay if he took about 5 hours to do it, and I said, sure, that'd be fine. That this congregation is used to long sermons, so you'll kind of settle in. We'll bring in lunch, and we'll hang out. But I'm glad to introduce to you my friend, Caleb.
Thank you, Don. And I'm so glad to be here. It's a privilege to be able be welcomed in amidst you. It's just different, like I joked with Don, to give me 30 minutes to be able to talk about my story is just not enough, because 30 minutes is just for saying hello and, you know, greeting and all that. And I think for us, it's a cultural, you know, it's a cultural thing. When people go to church on Sunday, it's how they, you know, spend their, that's how they entertained. And so you spend the whole day, you know, fellowshipping with the other families and friends. Oftentimes, because people don't have other things to do after church. So I'll try my best. If you see me going beyond, you know, the expectations, feel free to alert me, and I'll be able to step down. But it's a joy to be here amidst you. The opportunity to travel from Uganda is in Africa, to come up to here, about 24 hours to fly from Kampala to here, to Birmingham. It's quite a journey. But it's also a blessing to be able to come and be with you. For the last 18 years, I have been serving to rescue homeless children from the streets of Kampala and also from the ghettos. We have so many children who live in a homelessness situation. Kampala alone would have about 4,000 children living on the streets, in the open air, and in some of the slums. One of the reason, big reason why children find themselves on the streets is because of HIV and AIDS. HIV and AIDS is killing so many parents and leaving the children alone. Often we work with children as young as 2 years to 17 years. The first part of what we do is to be able to provide something to eat for them. So we have a program that feeds 80 to 120 children 3 times a week. We would wish to do 7 times a week, but in that part of the world, oftentimes we don't have always enough resources to be able to even just feed. And when we say feeding, it's not the kind of food that I have had the privilege to enjoy while I'm here. You know, good chicken or good burgers and all that. We're just talking about the basic food. We're talking about rice and beans, day one, day two, and all week. And even those, you cannot really find them. So there's a lot of malnutrition for most of the children. And we try our best with all we know that, this church, this congregation has been part of us. He's been helping in one way or another to at least be able to rescue and save at least one child. Now, why do I do this? Why have I been doing this for the last 18 years? I do this, I find motivation because I share the same background. I lived on the street, I got abandoned at the age of 7. I came from a family. My parents gave birth to 12 kids. And they didn't have enough. They were just peasant farmers. And we didn't have enough to eat. So at the age of 7, I thought, I'm not going to stay here and die of hunger. And as kids, with some of the other kids in the community, we just decided that we would wander. We would wander away and trying to go find food. Well, we wandered so long, we went for long distances and we got lost in there. We ended up on the street and we were 5. We lost 2 on the street in the first month because of the cold on the street. It's not like winter. We don't have winter, but sometimes our temperatures can go up to probably 30 degrees. And in our case, that's for children who are 5 years and 7 years, that's really cold. And they get pneumonia, breathing problems, and oftentimes they die. So we lost 2, and 3 of us continued to remain together and try to survive and looking for ways. And one of the ways is really to beg for handouts. And sometimes some days are good. You get kind people who will give you a coin here to go and buy bread. Some days are really difficult and you could go days and days without food. When that time happens, you just have to go find a way to eat from the trash, people who throw food, and then, continue begging. Now, when you get older, 12 and above, there's no one who is going to feel compassion. The people feel compassion to the young ones. When you get 10 and old and 15, people look at you as someone who is mature enough to survive. So in that case, you have to look for other ways to survive. And, one of those ways is you're going to go to steal. You're going to go steal to survive. You know that stealing is not good, but you're doing it to survive. So somehow you have no many other options but to just go and steal. But the other second is that you have to try and learn how to work, to just go and do manual labor, carry luggage from one bus station It would be like if Don is coming in town and he's going, continuing to go to Bundibugyo, you know, you might meet him at the bus station and he carry his stuff to another bus station and he may give you some small handouts so you go and buy bread. Now, the handouts, you know, when you keep begging, when you're a child and you keep begging, and I think the most difficult part in that begging for just a piece of bread is that eventually, and I was telling some of the friends, is that when people even reach out to give you, they do not want to give you and like touch your hands or put it in your hands because they think you are dirty and you don't look nice, you're a kid in not nice clothes. So what they do most of the times when kids beg, you know, they will get something and throw it on the ground. And from the culture where I come from, you know, that's how we feed dogs. So in a way, as people, as adults who you think should be reaching out to you and loving you and accepting you, so the adults are the ones throwing even food to you on the floor. So basically they are saying you're a dog and you have to deal with it and you have to accept it. And when this is happening over the years, what that does is that you actually accept that you're not human. You lose your humanity. You have no esteem left. In a city like Kampala, which is the capital, 4 million people, you are in a sea of 4 million people, but you are invisible. You have lost your identity as a child. You have no name. You have, just people come and tramp over you, running cars, and it's like you don't matter. You are nowhere. You are not important. You are nobody. And that has a way it affects children. So much so that by the time you reach 16 or 18, you're just a moving subject. You don't have feelings for as humans because everything has been taken away from you. And, you know, you have no name. It's been taken away from you. You have no esteem. It has been taken away from you. You have no identity. You belong nowhere. So you suffer alienation. You're just in there. And so what that does also eventually is that it makes you, because you miss, as a human soul, you crave for belonging. You know, you want to be touched. You want to feel, you want to hear a voice of a mom, feel protected and loved. You want to hear a voice, a hoarse voice of a father, and you want to know that there is a place to belong, like you long for a place to call home. And so you don't get those things. You find other ways to feel those things because somehow you cannot live without. And so what that does is that you are forced to take drugs. So you sniff glue. So when you sniff glue, you become a little high. And when you are high, you can go to the wall and start speaking to the wall. And the wall becomes actually a human being. And you can find someone, you know, on the wall having a really good conversation. And, you know, you are laughing, you are happy. If you are hungry, you fill up, you know. But the problem is that you become sober soon. Like, soon you are sober again. But you don't want to miss that warmth of, you know, because you've been speaking to maybe your mom. And you're getting that embrace. So you don't want to miss that. So what you do is you take in more. And because then you find a family. And then you get sober. And then you take more, you know. So that is the way, you know, you develop mechanisms to just survive. But it's a lie. You are living a lie. And so anyway, I lived down the streets for 5 years. And after 5 years, how I survived, I have no idea how I survived, because not many kids make it. And for all that time that I lived on the streets, things I saw as a child, you don't want to see them. The things that were done to me, the kind of abuse, you really don't want to get into that. It's, again, like you are torn between, you know, you're teared in two pieces because you're not human. It's like you're like a subject. You're just a piece of stone or piece of rock. So it's impossible to even try to explain the pain that I went through and what the pain that the children go through. I mean, we serve lunch in the slums, and Donnie's been there on that shelter. And you see the children in there, even as young as that, and so many people living in that small, very unsafe environment. You know, like young children, you know, do not have mothers to attend to, and it is raining, and the rains are washing them away, like as young as 1 year old, and you find those little bodies. You know, I've heard some of those little bodies. It's something you don't want to. If you have never seen a child die shouting for help, you don't want to see that. There's no pain that can be equated to that. That the children, and sometimes as I feed 180 children who have a soul like I do, and many of us have, we teach them, you know, try to bring in the message of the good news. And sometimes we ask, you know, do we have a volunteer to pray? And most of them will say, no, I can't pray. And they will be saying, maybe you pray, because for us, we have prayed a million times and God doesn't hear our prayers. So instead of wasting time to pray again, maybe you pray and your God will be able to hear. Because, and sometimes you can, you know, sympathize with them, because there are so many questions that they ask. Why? And I have questions. I have had issues also with God. So why would, you know, that kind of suffering for a 3 year, you know, old, 4 year old girl being, you know, raped, you know, in the slums? Because somehow there's a witch doctor who is said that if you sleep with a 4 year old girl, you're going to heal from HIV. And so men go out and just raping 4 year old. So we have kids, 4, 5 year old girls living with HIV and AIDS, because someone, a man who should be a parent, someone who should be rescuing, out of ignorance, went and raped her, and she is living innocently. The innocent soul doesn't know even what is going on. But she's carrying a deadly virus, and we just try as much as we can to save her. And for me, when I reach out to these children, really for me, the first thing is that I don't worry about 1 week. I don't worry about 1 year. I just, you know, it's like my prayer is that I wish I could save them today, so they can, you know, even if they just leave tomorrow and die, you know. But today, for me, is the biggest concern. So we do what we can. I have a team of mentors that go out in there to not just, we don't plan for 1 year or 10 years. We just want to save as many souls, those little children, so that they can live to see tomorrow and be able to enjoy and, you know, enjoy being, you know, children. But unfortunately, most of them, they don't live to see their fifth. They don't live to see their fifth birthday. We have several challenges in there. But amidst all that, we're not giving up. I said I will not give up. I will lose some of them. I will save some of them. I'll feed some of them, and the others will go hungry. I am not going to give up. Because if someone gave up on me, I would never have been rescued. I would never have, given shelter. I would never have lived up to today. So for me to be here, to have lived up to now, is a huge miracle, and I thank God for that every day. And I cannot explain why he kept me alive when other children, even though I got an abuse, at least life is still a gift. We are knocked, we get knocked every day, kids get knocked from every side. But life is still a gift. And I thank God for that every day. I pray for all the children, and I know that you have prayed for these children. You have supported the work we are doing, and I am here to thank you first and foremost, and to encourage you to continue partnering with ministries like our ministries, so much so that we can at least make life a little less painful for these children. Now, when I started as an outreach. I didn't have any material. My history is that I'm, from the streets. I don't have any material gains that I could give these ones. But I got reminded as I went into, mentors reached out to me, and I got reminded by, there's this verse in the book of Acts, I think it's chapter 3. It talks about, Peter and John going to pray in the temple, and there's this man who is, who's been begging. Normally they bring him at the church door and the temple gate, and he's begging for money and all that. And for this particular day, Peter and John are going in for the usual prayer, the normal prayer. And the beggar, the man who was born, disabled, is begging, for money. And I think for me, the part that Peter does really encourages me and carries me every day. He said, silver and gold I do not have, but what I have, I give it. And he said, in the name of Jesus of Nazareth, walk. And we read later that the man rose up and got his crutches, and he never begged again. So it doesn't, I think what that tells me is that I don't have to have silver and gold and all these riches to be able to save a soul. But what I have, which is the love that has been given to me, showed to me by so many people, so I carry this love is what I take in there to these children. It's like we want to love them. We want them to feel like for the dead we are with them. That even at the time of death, when they are dying, we don't want them to die crying for help. We want to reach out and hold them and watch them go. That's what we have. And so what we have, we give it freely. Like Peter did, and what we do is that we pray every day that the Lord will reach out to them. In many ways, God works in many ways, and through prayer, we have some of the children who are disabled. We have Martina who was born with a cerebral palsy. We try to do physiotherapy. She needs a wheelchair. We need to pray that the Lord will. She's beginning to, you know, for so many years, she would just left on the, you know, on the bed. She would just lie flat. She would never even turn because of the cerebral palsy. Because of the physiotherapies we are trying to do, she can now sit. She can, that's like miracles. So when people ask and they want to see miracles, I have so many miracles to show them, like a list of all these miracles. We have Fred, who is struggling with the epilepsy attacks, you know. But we know that also there is medicine for that can at least control and contain it. You know, we don't have those kinds of resources like medicine to contain epilepsy. But he's a lovely young guy, and so he'll be there praying with other boys. Fred is like 7. And then all of a sudden, from nowhere, he gets this attack and takes his life for another 15 minutes. He's under this attack, and then somewhere he comes back to life. And you can tell that it's where he has been, it's not good. And so pray for Fred that, again, like God makes ways where there seems to be no way. Pray for the mentor, pray for me, for the encouragement. Sometimes I have said, I reach a point, sometimes I think I'm strong, but I still remain human. Sometimes I go, you know, like it would be a beautiful day, like today. And I'm going out to do what I do every day, to reach out to the kids, you know? And you think that you've been doing it for a long time, so now it's like you're strong, there isn't any problem you have not seen, there isn't any pain you haven't really felt. And you meet someone, you meet a child, 3, 4, even sometimes 5 years. Basically wasting, dying piece by piece. You can count the you take up this shirt and you can count the ribs or the bones. It's like, and he wants, like, God, why? You know, like, why would, you know, a child like that go through that? Like, they don't know. Like, it's so small to know. Some of the big things we know, they don't know. And so I break down sometimes, you know. So pray for me for strength. Pray for the mentors, for the team that we work every day. We are strong, you know, but we are weak. We live in the flesh and we break down. And sometimes we want to give up. And sometimes we complain to God and sometimes we push him away. We kind of think he's not caring enough. So we need people to pray that we don't go that direction, because we know that he's in control of all these situations. And when that happens, we will continue reaching out as many children. There's one particular, I told you, sometimes I have had issues with, you know, even the face, struggle with the face, and I face with reality. And I have had occasions, I've been to funerals of these 3-year-olds. And I have heard, you know, ministers and pastors, you know, speaking, and Ruth, you know, baby Ruth is the Lord is called baby Ruth to go. And I'm thinking, you know, she's just 3-year-old. It's like, and then the whole concept of, okay, what, and we sometimes we begin discussing that, why is God so much interested in the African black kids? Because we read and hear countries in here, the mortality rate is a little bit controllable. So when ministers come out and say, you know, these children are being taken to heaven and the Lord wants them to be in there, and we just say, this God is interested only in black, you know, African children, 2-3 years, and we're thinking, what is a 2-year-old going to do in heaven? You know, like, God is going to, like, imagine how much if that child lived, how much impact that child would create in our communities and our lives. So we wrestle. We have a firm foundation in the faith, but we wrestle every day with the reality of everyday reality. So I'd be a liar if I told you that, oh yeah, 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 I'm just have all this faith that has been steady right from the time I've been saved. And no, I'll be a liar. I still struggle with these questions. Why? Why, you know, why? Why would the mother carry a baby for 9 months, and when the baby comes out and that baby is thrown on the garbage heap, why would the mother do that? So it's like you wrestle with this thing every day. But nevertheless, what, you know, what happens later, and then when you come like in a fellowship like this, and you have people like Don who come by and to really reach out, and he really, it's a source of encouragement, like, oh, you know, yeah, but we are there, you are not alone. To know that I am not alone makes a huge, huge, huge difference. And so for me, that's why I'm here to say thank you for accepting us to be one of you, to listen to our stories when Don comes, to see the pictures, you know. Life is difficult, but we will not give up. There is a part of us that will come out, that we will again begin experiencing the fullness of life, and we will continue serving as we can. And so for lack of the best words I could use, I can only say thank you and continue partnering, you know, continue partnering with us. It's not how, you know, how much, it's not about money, it has never been about money, it has been the relationship, the connectedness we receive. When Don comes in there, we see that his heart is with us, and that's, no amount of money can buy that. And I know that he carries the spirit, you know, you always, all your souls, you know, you may, not everyone in here may ever get the opportunity to come and be with us and fellowship with us. How we wish that would happen, that everyone of you would come and just, you know, be, you know, live among us. How sweet, how, you know, how joyful that would be. But we also know that sometimes because of work, because of other responsibilities, because also resources, it may never be possible for everyone. But you have a good leader who we know cares about us. He tries to come every year, and so we always look forward to him coming, and we just share and talk, and he encourages. He will touch me, you know, like he did this morning. He will pat on my shoulder. You don't get that every day, and you cannot take that for granted. But as I wind up, I don't know how far I am. I don't want to go for 5 hours. But as I wind that, so when we pick these children, we feed them. That's the first time we are meeting them on the streets, in the slum, 3 times a week, Monday, Wednesday, Friday. It's a time we begin to know them better. And then we have loving homes. We call them loving homes. 1 for girls and 1 for boys. So then we, you know, select these guys from the feeding program, And the girls, we go to the girls' home. You know, the idea is to now living there, not, you know, living, like, come feed and go. Now they are living in the homes where they feel safe and secure. They have mentors who live with them in there, who watch out to them every day. We teach them, you know, we like to share the gospel and the precepts and the principles of Jesus in the home. They come in all different religious backgrounds, Muslims, African religion, Christian backgrounds, because their parents could have been one of those. What do? We, even though we have a Christian background, you know, I'm a Christian, we are a Christian organization, we do not segregate them according to religion, according to their tribes, according to all these things. What we do, our job is to receive them, accept them, love them, share with them the ways of the gospel. And we leave the transformation. The Holy Spirit will work itself in them and will reveal, Christ will reveal himself in these children as they grow, as they continue to share in the gospel. But it's not our job to convert them from their background. Our joy is to show them love and the love of Christ, and we continue sharing those gospels while they live with us. They can live with us for as long as they get to 18 and 17, and when they are able to move on and begin supporting their lives. So we have two centers, one for girls, one for boys, and each home is, 50 capacity, and the idea is that we will continue working, rehabilitating them, and then resettling back to community. So rescue, rehabilitate, resettle back in the community. Go back, rescue, rehabilitate, resettle in the community. It's an in and out, process. And so at the moment now, we are building a school. It's almost done. So once we are able to feed them and we are able to bring them to these loving homes, now we have to think about giving them life skills, skills that they will later on, as when they grow, the skills that they can use to empower themselves and find work, find employment. And so the idea of the school, it's a vocational school, it's almost done. I wish I had slides to show you, but Don will show you probably, he has a copy of that. It's almost done. We hope that by February next year, the school will start. And so that means all the children in the homes will go to the schools, and the school is going to be open to the entire community. And the children who are coming from the community and that they are able to pay, they will pay tuition to come to school, and that tuition will be able to sustain the running of the school in the long run. So we are thinking not just rescue, temporary feeding and all that. We are also thinking about safety, their safety in the homes. But also, we are also thinking about, once they have been saved and they are now restored to their humanity, what else? What next? We need to empower them to begin thinking about how they will be able to support themselves in the future, because they are not going to live with us forever. And also, we want to push them out and be able to create room for more. So the school is almost done. We are just left with small needs. The financial need to complete the school is not very much, and we pray that the Lord, who is provided for all that, he will continue providing. And in February, the school will start, and we will be able to send you pictures to show you and the kids going to school. So I guess with that, I would beg to stop here and ask if you have a question or two. I'll be happy to take them. To visit the home, to visit the ministry. I guess it looks like a plane ticket could cost about $1,300. It's quite a distance. You will travel, for about 20 hours to get to Uganda. It's basically flying from here, the US, to Europe. Some airport in Europe could be Frankfurt or Heathrow or Amsterdam or somewhere, Brussels, you know, airport, and then to Entebbe, Entebbe, Uganda. And that whole thing would take about 20 hours. Once you... opportunities to teach, we learn English because we go to school. If you don't go to school, you don't learn English. You cannot speak English. So we like, for the children that do not have the opportunities to go to school, we would love teachers to come. And it's, people don't have to be qualified teachers as long as you can teach English and math and how to read and write. I missed a lot going to school in the earlier days. So by the time I started again as an adult, it was very difficult for me to even write. Even right now, thank God there is technology. Now I can text and type. But I can't, if I wrote here later, you could never read my handwriting. So no one taught me how to read and write. So people would come and the counselors, people would come, you know, help in the counseling programs to help in the rehabilitation, construction, you know, people help in the construction. They are all planting trees. We like to plant mango trees and all kinds of fruits. There are all kinds of activities, so much so that it fits almost everyone. Whoever comes in, they really find something to do. But the biggest is going to be helping the children learn how to read and write and be able to do a few, you know, basic math, you know, like, and science, basic, you know, geography, at least for people to know this is Uganda, below Uganda it's Tanzania, this is the Congo, this, you know, like, we sometimes assume that they will do, but we're trying, if our goal is to try and reduce the illiteracy levels, we're going to have to teach these children how to do at least the basics, so that where the world is going now, it's becoming more sophisticated, that if you never knew the basics, then somehow you're going to be left out. And we don't want this young generation, the whole generation, to just be left out in there. That way it will, you know, you're not going to cut the vicious circle which has continuously continued. And so our goal is to do that. You know, people to teach, you know, the gospel, share in the love of Christ. Maybe when they hear it from someone, you remember when I said, sometimes we ask them to pray and they say, God doesn't hear them. So they need someone to pray on their behalf. But we need now teachers to come in and take them through that. No, God hears. And he, you know, he's not going, you're not going to ask for a bed today, and in the evening you're going to see a bed fall down or a mattress fall down. We need to help them understand that that's not how God works, but also that's not because he's not there, he's not listening, and he's just listening for that particular group of people and not we. But that takes time. So someone has to be in there and they have to feel that you really mean it. You mean it, and you are willing to go, you know, further in helping them understand that. And I'll read you something small that I had written that may resonate with this. And then I will stop. It encourages me. You know. We all have had an unexpected encounter with a kind-hearted and loving soul that made us feel better, inspired us, or uplifted us. They were not looking for anything back from us, no reward from us. We have encountered hard, loving hearts that really have come out without expecting us to give them anything. They simply were allowing some goodness and an unconditional love to flow through them in a particular moment on our behalf. Sometimes adding a spark of joy, radiating some light onto us for no other reason apart from simply being a blessing to another. Sometimes one such encounter can leave a lasting impression. So when I come in here and I get hugs sometimes, it can leave a lasting impression. I never had hugs from my parents. I did not feel for a long time. I didn't feel how a hug could be so beautiful. So when I get opportunity to hug people, I take more than just one hug to compensate for something that I didn't. I never got an opportunity to hear my parents say, "I love you." Up to now, they've never, no parent, no my parents have ever told me, "I love you." So when I come in here, that's like, I've had parents, telling their little children, "Oh, I love you, Sway, I love you so much." And I feel like, oh, I wish I could go back to like, and they are hugging them and the kids are really being a little spoiled. And I feel a little jealous about, even though I'm a big boy now, but I feel jealous because now no one can ever lift me again and carry me like that. So I missed on that opportunity. So sometimes one such encounter can leave a lasting impression on us, on you, forever. These incidences, these encounters, these incidences are calling us to be that also, to be that, calling us to brighten the light in one another and thereby increasing the total light shining in our world. So you are in here, some things you do here, they go as far as Uganda, even though it doesn't know the distance. So we can feel love even though you're here. So I'm being asked to be that kind of person for someone today. So can we be that person for someone else? And today, not tomorrow. Because you remember for me, when I reach out to the children, I'm not looking at tomorrow. I'm looking at today. Like, can they leave today and enjoy the afternoon and playing soccer, in the afternoon? And then what happens tomorrow? That's not my business. But today I want to see them in the afternoon going to the park and playing soccer and becoming children. So can you be can you be that person for someone today in our communities, in our church, and everyone? And I saw that happening this morning. I loved that. This morning, so someone was calling for, what do you feel for someone? That was beautiful for me. I've never seen a church that does that. So I felt really good. I felt at home that you are doing it here. So Jesus says, "You are the light of the world. You are the light of the world." So when we become light, we shine across the continent and the whole world. And then he says, "If you have done it to one of these, you have done it for me." And Psalms 40 said, "I waited, I prayed and waited patiently, and the Lord has heard my cry, And we see that happening every day. He hears our cry and he reaches out to us in ways we never know. So, and thank you again and God bless you.